I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, and welcome back to The Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. This show is about life, and I love focusing on how to improve my life and yours. I like to get tips from people because I think that's the best way to kind of move forward. I think people need to hear certain advice in order for it to resonate. I got this great email from a listener that I wanted to share. Craig writes, quote, "You always ask for tips on how to live a better life, and I thought I'd throw mine out there since whenever I mention it at work, people seem to really like it. In our house, Monday night is cocktail hour for dinner night. Nothing crazy, a cheap bottle of wine, cheese and crackers, olives, splurge for the good ones, sliced cucumber and tzatziki, and usually one hot item, pigs in a blanket, boneless buffalo wings, etc. And it's just fantastic. The ritual of it is nice. Having it on a Monday is nice, so you never have to figure out what's for dinner that night. And most of the stuff is easy to supply to keep on hand for a couple of weeks in a row so you don't have to worry about food shopping. It's the perfect way to start the week. I really think doing it on a Monday is a big part of why we enjoy it so much," end quote. I really enjoyed reading that. I like it so much for the simplicity of it. When we look to make positive changes in our lives, and I know I do this too, I feel like we try to do too much. So, okay, how do we make Monday dinners easier and more enjoyable? You can say, okay, I'm going to spend the weekend meal prepping for the whole week. And then maybe you do it. Maybe you do spend your whole Sunday getting stuff ready. And then maybe you do it again the next week. And that's great. If that works for you, fantastic. But if you fail to do that, then you feel all bad for yourself. And I don't think that it ends up benefiting you at all. I think making big changes starts with little changes. Gradual improvements is what I'm all about. I'm very into making small incremental changes. That's why I just love this. I love this, you know, Monday cocktail hour thing. It's just such a good, happy idea. I'd love to hear more ideas like this or otherwise. If you have small things you're doing to change your life for the better, email me, carolmarkowitzshow@gmail.com, or tweet at me on X or whatever you kids are doing these days. Coming up next, an interview with Phil Klein. Join us after the break.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant, players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. My guest today is Phil Klein, editor of National Review Online. Hi, Phil.
Hey, good to be here. How are you doing?
So nice to have you on. You know, when I was thinking about this conversation, and I think a lot of times I don't know what I'm going to talk to people about, but I feel like with you, I know I'm going to start with pizza, which is maybe not what people are expecting, but
it's important.
You're both very into pizza. We have a shared affinity for it and we travel places to go eat it. But you take it a step further and you make it at home. And do you still ship in water from New York, or is that?
I've kind of gotten lazy just because logistically it's kind of hard. I used to keep a stash of Brooklyn water at home
for making pizza.
Yeah. Just for making pizza and bagels.
Mm-hmm.
When I make pizza, I tend to use just local water and not go through the Brooklyn water. When I visit New York, there's always just more stuff to carry.
Yeah.
That sort of, you know, buying a gallon of Poland Springs, dumping it out, and then filling it in the tap of a hotel. Just,
right.
You know,
seems crazy.
Yeah.
So does the local water work as well?
I've had pretty good results. I've been making more Brooklyn Square pizza as opposed to more Neapolitan pies. I find that the pizza's gotten better generally, and that in most decent sized cities, you could find serviceable sort of, you know, like Neapolitan fancy pizza.
Right.
But it's harder to find like what we'd call growing up Sicilian pizza, or for those who have been to L&B Spumoni Gardens, the classic where you put the cheese on first. And so it sort of merges with the dough as it cooks and the sauce goes on top.
Is that what you make at home? Like the upside down squares like that?
I do. I have actually, it was based, I made a few modifications, but I mainly use the recipe that you had sent me like 10 years ago.
Okay.
So now it's.
I'm going to need you to send that back now that I cook.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, if you follow it, it's actually quite a good recipe, and it's easier. You don't, especially when you're having people over, like one of the issues what I'd have with making pizza at home and when I'd have people over is that because I don't have an actual pizza oven, it takes longer to cook than an actual place. And so you have people over, and then you're like, for an hour and a half, like forming all of the pizzas and, you know, molding them and
topping
them and so forth.
Yeah.
Some people, I mean, now, of course, they have a number of home pizza ovens that you could get smaller. But when I was starting out, that wasn't an option. And then I'd go on the internet and some of the like pizza freak forums, and everyone would always be obsessing of like how you could get the temperature hot pizza oven.
Yeah.
So one guy figured out that on the self-cleaning mode, an oven can get up to like 700 degrees or something. Only when it's on the cleaning mode, the oven locks in place.
Right.
So this guy took gardening shears to like destroy the locks on his oven.
Oh, so my God.
Pizza on self-cleaning mode.
I love that. Like, I love that the internet is full of crazy people who have done wacky things that they tell other people about. Like, you can Google anything, right? It's like literally anything that you want to know. You just a search away. I really appreciate that. Like, how do I disengage my oven during cleaning mode to make pizza at 700 degrees? Here's how you do it with kitchen shears or gardening shears.
Yeah,
it's great. I agree with you that good pizza is not as hard to find as it used to be. I know that, first of all, when we moved to Florida, people were like, oh, you're going to miss the pizza. That's going to be... I really don't. Like, I have other things that I miss. I always talk about Asian food is like just really top of the list, specifically Chinese food. But pizza, not at all. There's a lot of very, very good pizza places, not just that thin crust, you know, fancy pizza, which, look, I love that. But a lot of very New York style, like slice places, like the kind that I grew up with, the kind that really like hit my nostalgia button. And my guess about why that is, and I've tweeted this in the past, even when we lived in Brooklyn, I think a lot of the Italian Americans moved out of New York and they moved, you know, throughout the country and definitely to Florida. South Florida is very Italian, and they opened their places here. And so I don't miss the pizza. I think that they've gone everywhere and they're making the pizza. And I don't think maybe the New York water doesn't matter. Maybe that's really what the secret is here.
I mean, the thing that I will say is that is hard to get outside of New York is just like, which honestly, it's harder to find in New York itself at this point. But just like when we were growing up, just the local place that isn't necessary. You wouldn't necessarily wait in line 2 hours for.
Yes, it's not the destination. It's the corner, amazing corner place.
And they do everything just pretty good. Like a parm sub, chicken
big ziti.
Like ziti, whatever you want. That, you know, garlic bread, cheese, like
sort
of those sorts of places are hard to find out in New York.
Absolutely. And I think they're hard to find in New York. I mean, when I lived in Park Slope, we did not have that. There was one place, I know, you know, and everybody talks about that one place, Luigi's, and it's really the only one. And it's old school and it's been around a while. But all the other corner places were just okay.
They used to play Smiling Pizza or Smiley's Pizza on the outside.
I think I've had it. Yeah, on 9th Street. Yeah.
That used to be kind of... Yeah, you know, so that used to be my F Street stop. So then, I go there, and again, it was I've never been there since I've left Park Slope.
Right, you're not like, let's go back there. Yeah. But I like that, you know, the destination pizza places in Brooklyn are still good. Obviously, DeFara's, Giuseppina's, Lucali's, all those, and there's a bunch of new ones. My brother always sends me F&F, etc. And you know, Listen, they're still great. It's not that. It's just that you can get great pizza elsewhere. And, you know, that's the thing about moving and leaving New York, Phil. It turns out life exists somewhere else.
That's what I tried to tell you.
I know. Well, the joke is that for a long, long time, Phil and I met in New York. And then he moved away. And I was, you know, kind of bitter about it. And I would always say, like, he has to move back. And he'd kind of say, you know, no, there's some good stuff going on outside New York, too. And so now I maybe believe him.
Of course, the history is like, Carol's always like 10 years late to acknowledge it. Because I remember when we first met, about which must have been almost 20 years ago at this point. I was living in Park Slope at the time. And the first, maybe the first thing you ever said to me was, oh, fake Brooklyn.
Well, I still believe that. I still think of Park Slope as fake Brooklyn.
And then you ended up in Park Slope.
Yes, but with the acknowledgement that I was living in, and like why we liked Park Slope was that it was Manhattan-y. It was like Manhattan-y, but like a little better. It had neighborhood, you know, more of a neighborhoody feel. People knew each other. But it had all the Manhattan conveniences. It had the restaurants and just the way of life was very city orientated, as opposed to where I grew up, which I consider real Brooklyn, deeper in Brooklyn, very ethnic, very immigrant heavy, not hot popping restaurants, no blue ribbon restaurant. So, yeah, you know, I stand by the fake Brooklyn characterization, even though I did end up there. And even though, yes, Phil, you were right. It turns out, you know, you were right about a lot of things.
I feel like the boundaries of fake Brooklyn, though, have expanded in the past 20 years.
I just think of it as like the hip parts, like the not very... I can't say not authentic, because obviously they're authentic. They're fine. But just... like Greenpoint, where the term fake Brooklyn came from was right after college. I lived in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, which when I was growing up, it was a very Polish neighborhood. But then it's close to Manhattan. So it just became hipper and hipper. I had a cool bar on my street. And now it's completely hipster-fied, if that's still even, you know, hipster is still even a term that people use. And my brother, when he would come visit me, he was like, you know, if I was like 23 or 22, you know, so he's 5 years younger, he'd call his friends and be like, I'm at my sister's place in fake Brooklyn, but I'll be back to real Brooklyn later. He needed to differentiate, like, I'm still in Brooklyn, but I'm nowhere near where we live. So that's where it came from. I didn't come up with that. You know, that's the origin story of me and Phil Klein. So your editor at National Review Online, I guess we could talk about things other than pizza. Do you feel like you've made it?
Well, it's a difficult question without kind of sounding sort of, on the one hand, hard on yourself if you say no. On the other hand, sounding arrogant if you say yes. I would say that I feel fortunate in the sense that when I was growing up and when I went to school in New York City, surrounded by liberals, I was always the sort of weirdo conservative that during lunchtime was, you know, reading conservative stuff like National Review and listening to conservative talk radio and like racing home to listen to conservative talk radio. I could still remember the whole WABC lineup from when I was in high school, where you had Rush Limbaugh noon to three, then Bob Grant from 3 to 7, and then overnight was Jay Diamond, who I understand subsequently became a leftist.
Oh, but I remember
at
heard
the
of
time
him.
He was the overnight. And so what I used to do is I used to argue with all my, you know, leftist fellow students, and I used to write stuff for the school political newspaper, just kind of right-wing subversive stuff for the school.
Yeah.
And it kind of is fun that I get to do, you know, now I'm talking to you on a show when I, you know, sometimes I get to be on radio shows and don't sort of fight biz like the old days. You used to have to fight busy signals and know you get on to be the caller.
Yeah.
And so I kind of feel lucky in the sense that, and it in my case, it's sort of, you know, getting to work and oversee such a great group of people and sort of an important publication for the conservative movement. But personally, I feel like whatever it is that you could do, it sounds kind of like cliche, but if you get to do something that you enjoy and get paid for it, I feel like you can kind of feel like you've made it. And it might be cooking pizza, and maybe
right.
You know, it might be whatever it is, but I kind of feel like that is the barometer, because it's not the same thing for every, for some people.
Yeah,
making millions of dollars is making it. I'm certainly not in that category, but
you know, I've had people on the show that make millions of dollars and said that they don't feel like they made it. So yeah. It's even in that case, you still might not feel like you've gotten to where you want to go.
Yeah.
What would you be doing if you weren't a writer?
I honestly don't know what I'd be doing. Unfortunately, you know, I was in a family that we were all writers of some sort.
Unfortunately.
And so that, I don't know. I just kind of always knew. It's sort of like in my family, it was like being, I don't know, it's sort of like all your family is mechanics or plumbers or whatever. Like, that's just what you kind of feel like you're going to end up doing. I almost never really thought that I'd be doing something else, but maybe running a restaurant.
Why not pizza guy? You know, yeah. I feel like you're already doing it. Get paid.
Yeah. No. So I feel like maybe the restaurant business, but it is sort of a ton of work. It's not the type of thing that you do as a side hustle if you want to do it properly.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back on the Carol Markowitz Show.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. The stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What do you enjoy writing about most? Like, I have your book on Obamacare. Are you going to have any other books in the future, or what do you think?
That I'm writing now, but I always like the idea of some sort of passionate about politics and the horse race type of stuff, but also, and I've done extensive campaign reporting over the course of my career, but also I like getting into policy and ideas and how, you know, they sort of come together, how policy can shape politics and how politics can shape policy. And I think it's important to kind of understand both, because if just pure electoral politics devoid of trying to advance the ball on any tangible policy aims is sort of not meaning, it's sort of meaningless. Whereas if you're just sort of focusing on white papers to the exclusion of understand, you know, in a vacuum, to the exclusion of what the political realities are, that's kind of difficult. So that's why healthcare was something that I focused on so extensively, because, well, when I started writing about healthcare, it was, you know, it was before the Obama administration, and I saw that there progressives were pushing for whoever was going to be president to put universal healthcare as their top priority.
Right.
And they wanted, and I saw that there was, the conversation was almost completely dominated by progressives. Conservatives are great on, you know, like guns and military matters and all sorts of other things, but I feel like healthcare was sort of dismissed as a kind of left-wing issue that you know, like wusses write about. And so I kind of said that felt like there was an opening for conservatives to do rigorous policy work and writing on that.
And then, so, of course, they all followed you on that, right? And they did such a good job. Everything worked out exactly as it should, right?
But obviously, like, it, a few years after I started writing on it, it became the focal point of our politics.
Right.
About 2009, let's say 2016. So it ended up, or, you know, I guess you could say till the repeal fell in 2017. So for a good 8 years, there was this sort of, if you were covering policy, you were covering politics. And if you were covering politics, you had to cover policy. I think that changed a bit with the Trump era. And obviously with Trump, it becomes much more of a debate about what you think about Trump and what he said or did on a given day.
Yeah. What would you say is our largest, like, cultural or societal issue?
So I thought of that, and there are obviously, like, a ton of issues that you could point out, but I was thinking, as I've been reading a lot about stuff about the important families and raising families and fertility and how people are getting married later and not having as much kids. Of course, Tim Carney, who you had on recently, even though his book isn't necessarily explicitly a call for people to have more kids, he does.
He lives the lifestyle that encourages that.
And he sort of writes about how our, you know, country has become family unfriendly in many ways just because of cultural and societal expectations that we placed upon ourselves. But I was thinking that a lot of the focus, and this isn't to take anything away from Tim or Brad Wilcox or any of the excellent writers on this subject, but I think a lot of the focus on conservatives is on sort of people are getting married later, they're not having as much kids, trying to convince people to what, you know, the virtues of family formation. But it strikes me that one problem, which is upstream from that, is that I think that it's very difficult for a lot of people to meet each other. And I think that there are a lot of people who would happily get married and would love to have kids, but can't because the way, it's not easy to meet someone. Not everyone's lucky enough to meet someone. And so to me, I kind of feel like if you look at the graphs and all these surveys about, like, people aren't interested in having kids, or, you know, like, people aren't interested in getting married, I feel like society can kind of absorb a bunch of dinks and so forth if we could figure out a better way for people who are interested in getting married to get each other. Now, you think that in theory, that's something the internet should make better, because I think of like Uber, right? Like when we were kids growing up, the annoyance of a taxi.
Yes, they've solved the problem. Why can't they solve this one?
It was just totally random, right? Like you would be waiting on a corner.
You'd be
waiting, hoping that an open cab.
Hope it works out. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were other cab drivers who were probably somewhere else in the city.
Yes.
Like looking for a fare. Hey, there's no one here who wants a fare. I'm just going to wander around until I find
someone. Yeah. Well, you think literally the Uber for dating is online dating apps. That's what they are, right? Yeah. But they're not working. Yeah. And there's something about them that makes people, like, I guess, you know what the thing is? Like when you take an Uber ride, you're going to take another Uber ride. But if you go on a dating app, it sort of dissuades you from finding the person, because then you're not going to be on the dating app anymore. And there's definitely something to that. But, you know, there has to be a better way, right? There has to be a better way. Maybe it is going back to basics, back to waiting on the corner for your car, you know, in a dating sense. I talk about luck a lot on here. I think married people sometimes convince themselves that they are skillful in finding their person. And I feel like a lot of it is luck and timing and all of that. But there has to be some way for people to meet each other. There has to be a disruption of the system. And do we need a startup for that?
Because I don't know.
I mean, that would do well.
Talking to single friends about how the dating app situation is, it seems like a disaster. And from what the studies I've seen have said, that at this point, a majority of people meet each other online.
Right.
So if that's the majority of how people are meeting, and it's sort of it's basically something that algorithmically is sort of geared toward not really serious, substantial people trying to meet each other.
Right.
I don't really know how.
But even the serious people are not meeting each other. Something about it just didn't work out the way it was supposed to. And where other problems were solved by technology, like you said, I think that that is one that has been exacerbated. And I don't know. I don't know what to tell my own kids. I don't know. I mean, they're still young, but I imagine that when there is time for dating age, I'm going to maybe dissuade them from using the apps, because I just don't think that they work the way that they're supposed to. And, you know, so living a good life, all of that, I think, is tied into having somebody. And I know that that's, you know, it's not a controversial opinion in our world, but end here with your best tip for my listeners on how they can live a better life. And it can be, you know, eat more pizza and date offline.
Well, I mean, I think to tie this into pizza, I would say my view is you should always just try new things so that stuff doesn't get boring. Like the pizza stuff started because it was back during a time when it was really hard to get good pizza out of DC. So I felt like I had to take matters into my own hands and kind of learn how to make pizza and bagels the way I like them. But I've done that. I've learned how to smoke meat in recent years. So that's been a big vocation. I realized, in part because of a lot of the pandemic era bread baking, I'd like gotten very out of shape. So I took up swimming because I hate, you know, I hate running. I hate exercise. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the worst.
people that exercise all the time, I'm just doing machinery. But like swimming is amazing. It's just because it's sort of like a full body workout, and it does cardio. And also it's the one time where, even though you could get theoretically waterproof earplugs and stuff.
No, you're disconnected. Yeah. That's the best. Yeah.
And it's just like the one time where if some major thing happened, somebody tweeted something really stupid, or, you know, a bomb went off somewhere, like I wouldn't know what, you know.
Yeah, you're going to find out about it later.
Yeah.
That's the way it's supposed to go. I think that that's a normal way to live.
Yes. So I would just say, if there's something that you're thinking of doing, I don't know if it's learning a foreign language, taking up a piano, or what, I find that it is good to constantly keep things interesting by just trying new stuff.
Thank you, Phil Klein. Thanks for coming on. Read him at National Review. Thanks so much for joining us on The Carol Markowitz Show. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores. The
stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.